Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. We got a little fearsome foursome going on, joined in the studio. In the studio, I'm so pleased to be able to say that, by our insider, Dave McMenamin, live from home, our senior writer, host of the Low Post podcast, Mr. Zach Lowe, and our NBA champ, Kendrick Perkins. Coming up, Perk's former coach Doc Rivers is going to stop by. We'll be discussing the Sixers' expectations this season, Joel Embiid's injury, and of course, some Celtics memories. Paul Pierce is going to join us for that segment as well. It's going to be killer. First, though, the Lakers blew out the Warriors last night, but as the trade deadline approaches, are there roster tweaks coming? I asked LeBron about what it's like to live through trade season last night. Take a listen to what he had to say.
Teams are always just trying to figure out a way how to get better, especially the ones that believe they can make a run for a championship. So that's the way it's always been for the last, I guess, 5 to 7 years, 10 years of my career with the trade deadline and the buyouts and things of that nature. So it's 10 days. It's going to happen really fast. So we'll see what happens over the next 10 days.
So, Dave, look, it's changed. When he said, for the last 5 or 10 years, when LeBron started, trade season transactions were not as crazy, but they are crazy now. Yes, they are. So who are the top trade and buyout candidates for the Lakers as we approach this March 25th deadline?
Well, I'll start by saying, based on the Lakers' roster construction and where they're going to be at salary cap-wise, it's going to be most likely buyout candidates over trade targets for the Lakers, because if they were to do away with some of their young talent in order to pursue a trade, they're going to be in a tough situation this summer moving forward. But let's start with three names. Andre Drummond of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who's been parked on the bench for about a month now as they try to pursue trade targets. And I'm hearing that the Cavs are receiving interest in them, but because he has such a high salary number, it's going to probably be tough for them. Perhaps need a three-team scenario in order to get that trade. Otherwise, it would be a buyout. Let's go to J.J. Redick of the Pelicans, whose shooting percentage is down a little bit this year, only shooting 36% from three, but he's one of the true pure shooters in the game, and someone, at this stage of his career, trying to get that championship. Yep. Last year was the first year of his career he missed the playoffs, and we don't know how much time he has left, and we'll see if he gets dislodged from the Pelicans, because he is not one of those guys that's been parked yet, like some of these other guys. The other guy, PJ Tucker, who was such a vital piece on those Houston Rockets teams that knocked on the door of making the finals and upsetting the Golden State Warriors. Toughness, grit, corner three-point shooting, playoff experience, and there's going to be a bunch of suitors for him as well. There already are. Yes. The Rockets are receiving a lot of interest. Those are the names I would start with at the top of the Lakers list.
Yeah, Tucker is going to be a trade, not a buyout for sure. As Dave points out, there's lots of interest. The name that I like there is Andre Drummond. I think Andre Drummond has become underrated because he's been sort of pigeonholed as this empty stat stuffer guy, empty calorie stats. And I think some of that criticism has been fair at times, but the stats have meaning. It's not just the points and rebounds. He gets a ton of steals for a center, which is really valuable. And if you put a guy like that with LeBron James, he's going to look 20% better immediately, rolling to the rim, dunking, getting offensive rebounds. He's the kind of vertical threat that LeBron really likes that they do not have this year with Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell as their centers. I think he'd be great for the Lakers. And I agree with Dave. I think the Cavs could make an Andre Drummond trade right now. I just don't think it's a trade that they particularly want to make. I don't think they've gotten an offer that is to their liking. I think it's more bad money coming back to them, not a lot of assets. So if it gets to buyout territory, I really like the Andre Drummond fit with the Lakers. I think he's become underrated.
I agree. And look, the Lakers need a dynamic roller and a shot blocker. And if they can't get Andre Drummond, I would look into bringing back JaVale McGee. LeBron James and the rest of some of the Lakers are very familiar with him. He's familiar with the organization. He's what they're missing in that centerpiece. We all know that LeBron loves spacing. He would love to have a guy like J.J. Redick. And I know J.J. Redick's shooting percentage is down, but sometimes a change of scenery will change that. And knowing that he's playing on a contender, because KCP hasn't been consistent this year, and we know that he elevated his game last year, but just having a guy like J.J. Redick on the court, even if he don't touch the ball, is a huge decoy and can open up the paint for LeBron James, Anthony Davis when he comes back, and Dennis Schroeder going downhill, because now the paint is wide open. You have a dynamic roller. If you could add a guy like JaVale McGee, low risk for high reward, you won't have to pay him much because he'll be on the vet minimum if the Cavs buy him out.
Yeah, Park, certainly JaVale McGee is someone who was well-liked in the Lakers organization, was one of those bodyguards along with Dwight Howard protecting Anthony Davis in his first year with the Lakers. Because they traded him to Cleveland, JaVale will actually have to end up being on another roster first before he could end up on the Lakers and be waived. Of course, the Cavs front office have been very active ever since Kobe Altman took over, and so it wouldn't surprise me if they were to work out some sort of deal to move him. And certainly Jared Allen is the center of the future with that organization. But there is another hurdle for them to jump over to be able to eventually grab McGee if he is.
Well, Dave, they know how to make things happen and make things work. It's not hard to get a third team involved and say, hey, we're going to trade JaVale. All you have to do is cut him, and then the Lakers go pick him right back up. I went through that when I was in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I want to look even further ahead, because Dave mentioned at the start of this that they can't make a move at the deadline that is going to mess them up for this summer, right? And here are the notable free agents for the Lakers after this season. The biggest question mark, of course, Dennis Schroeder, who was traded to L.A. just for this season. Dave, what do the Lakers hope to do with him?
I mean, there's already been discussions, Rachel, between his representative, Alex Tsouratsis, and the Lakers about trying to find an extension for, a 27-year-old, bright, young point guard, someone who is ascending at the same age range as Anthony Davis, some guy who plays on both ends. But the question mark for the Lakers is, do you want to risk going to free agency and potentially losing him?
Right.
Or the other risk is paying him beforehand to lock him up, but then what if he doesn't perform in the playoffs the way you hope to, and now you are tied to this player? I mean, it reminds me of the situation a couple years ago with the Milwaukee Bucks and Eric Bledsoe. Bledsoe, it was good for Milwaukee in terms of getting him at a market value that was perceived lower than what he could have gotten if he went to free agency. But then he didn't have a strong postseason. He is no longer a Buck. That could be the worst case scenario for the Lakers if they do go forward. But, all things considered, Brian Windhorst wrote a really good story a couple weeks ago about what the Lakers' salary cap situation could look like with luxury tax. If they can get a discount on Schroeder by signing him now versus having him taste the waters in free agency, that could be the best bet when it comes to the wallet.
Yeah, to me, there's a distinction between Dennis Schroeder and Eric Bledsoe. Dennis Schroeder's been in the playoffs a lot, and he's not shown any of that sort of volatility. Like, he's the same guy in the playoffs he is in the regular season, which is a good, solid player. I don't think you have to worry about him underperforming in the playoffs. And like Dave said, you don't make a trade for Dennis Schroeder when you have LeBron James nearing the end of his prime, if not past the end of his prime, really. Anthony Davis, your title window is now. You trade for him to bring him back. To me, the complicated questions are Talen Horton-Tucker and Alex Caruso. In a market with way more cap space than star players or even sort of sub-star players, those guys are good, and they're going to get a lot of interest. And Talen Horton-Tucker has solidified himself right now as a key member of the Lakers rotation. They've even played about point guard here or there the last couple games with guys missing. I think those guys, when you look at their tax situation, and look, no one's going to cry for the Buss family about the tax bill and all that, but let's be realistic. If they have to pay a lot for Schroeder, which they will, I think one of those guys may be on a different team next year. We'll see.
I know one thing. Look, they call Dennis Schroeder Dennis the Menace for a reason. He is a problem on the court. He is one of the few guys that pick up 94 feet defensively. LeBron James loved his tenacity. He loved the edge and the spirit that he plays with. And last year, I mean, he was the runner-up for sixth man of the year, averaging almost 20 points a game. So he's still in his prime. He's going to be in his prime in the next 5 years, still for the next 5 years. I think the Lakers get something done and get something done early. You don't want him to hit the free agency market. For as Talen Horton-Tucker, I think the Lakers got to do everything in their power to keep him. I know everyone around the league loves this kid. His ceiling is very, very high. Sadly to say, but Alex Caruso, who is a fan favorite, he's one of my favorite. He's probably going to walk. But you got to do everything in your power, if I'm the Los Angeles Lakers, to lock in Dennis Schroeder and keep Talen Horton-Tucker. He's a young stud, and his future is very, very bright.
Yeah, in fact, the Lakers love Talen Horton-Tucker. He's a guy who they were basically able to discover in the draft. He never even do a private workout for the Lakers. They bought a pick from the Magic to be able to get him in the second round. Last year, played sparingly. Last night was only his 41st game of his career. He puts up 18 points, 10 assists. Kyle Kuzma said he's probably the second or third best player on our team at driving and getting into the paint, and he has the know-with-all to be able to find open shooters, or he can finish with both hands around the rim, the long length, bright, young work ethic, just a guy they love, and they'd love to lock up.
Yeah, and look, we didn't talk about that much about the Laker game from last night. Obviously, it turned into a blowout. But just for the people, Dave, what did Kyle Kuzma say happened to him on that technical free throw where he shot an air ball?
There's an earthquake. There's an earthquake.
There you go.
Watch out,
everybody. Apparently that's an explanation if you want to know about the notable thing that happened in that game. Hey, it's, you know, what are you going to do? Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to see you.
We can do the local news later if we want to. We'll be working on that here in this studio. I'm so happy to have people in the studio. Director Kathy's going to have to deal with me all day. Coming up, since he's now away from the Spurs, we are going to talk about the best fit for LaMarcus Aldridge. Zach Emper going to weigh in on that. Let's talk about the Spurs and LaMarcus Aldridge, though, mutually agreeing to part ways as the franchise looks to either trade or buy out the seven-time All-Star. So, Zach, where do you think is the most likely landing spot for LaMarcus right now?
I think a trade is going to be hard for San Antonio, so let's assume buyout. And I think then you'll have a lot of interest. I think he's an insurance policy for both LA teams. I think you'll hear some Boston noise. I think you'd hear, you know, some of the other main contenders like that. But I like, here's some under-the-radar teams. He probably won't go there via buyout, but he'd be fun in Charlotte for a team that is basically playing PJ Washington as its backup center a lot. He'd be a hell of a lot of fun in New Orleans, spacing the floor for Zion. And my personal favorite, remember when Phoenix almost signed him in free agency, tried to get him? Phoenix is playing those kind of Frank Kaminsky minutes. Sometimes Kaminsky plays with Ayton, sometimes he plays with Saric. I would love to see them upgrade those minutes to LaMarcus Aldridge, another dimension, another guy who can go get you a bucket maybe once or twice a game. You can't lean on him like you could even two or three years ago. He's lost a lot, particularly defensively. But that Phoenix team is one guy away from being really, really interesting. By the way, they're the number two seed in the West already. That's kind of my favorite one, honestly.
Well, I kind of like L.A. landing in two spots. I would like to see him reunite with the Portland Trail Blazers, Dame Dollar, C.J. McCullough, not knowing the what's going to happen with Zach Collins or even Big Nurkic. I think L.A. would be a great fit going back to Portland, but I think he would be a good fit in Boston. But here's the thing about L.A. I don't see a team or contender actually trading for him and giving up and taking on that salary, so Zach is right. He will hit the buyout market, but L.A. is going to have to take a lesser role. LaMarcus Aldridge is going to have to learn to take a lesser role. He's not the LaMarcus Aldridge of old. He's going to have to buy into being a role player now, a guy that can space the floor, knock down shots, open up the lanes, and he's going to have to get better defensively.
I mean, that's why I wonder about any fit with the Blazers, Perk, because we know how he left Portland the first time and sort of taken a little bit of a backseat to Dame. It was reported that he wasn't thrilled with that, and well, now he'd be coming back in even a lesser role. I don't know how the emotions would kind of play into it there. I love the Phoenix fit too, Zach, so we'll have to see how that goes. Obviously, the Spurs aren't they're not using him anymore for a reason, right? The on-off numbers on the floor, significantly better when he is not on the floor with them. So I just don't see anyone making a huge trade that's going to commit a lot of salary to a guy that the Spurs are saying, not quite good enough to be with us right now either. If they can amicably part ways and he can end up in Phoenix, that would be a win for everyone. All right, guys, coming up, Perk's former coach Doc Rivers joining the Jump. Paul Pierce is going to hop in here as well. We will talk Joel Embiid, expectations for the Sixers, and of course, some Celtics memories. So fun. Do not miss this or change the dial. Welcome back to The Jump. At this time, we are so happy to be joined by current head coach, 2008 NBA champ, Doc Rivers. Doc, I'm sitting here listening to you talk to these two guys. You thought you were free of these two, right? Now you are. You're just right back here again.
This is forever. This is forever.
This is forever, Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel, we will never be separate ever.
I'm so sorry for you to hear that. Well, really, I know your plight as well, sitting in this chair. Doc, thank you for joining us. Your Sixers been at near the top of the East basically all season. Have they exceeded all your expectations so far? Is this where you guys thought you would be?
I didn't know where we're going to be, but I thought we'd be somewhere in this area. Let me put it that way. And I just thought we'd keep getting better as the year has gone on. And we're doing that, you know. Early in the year, without Joel or Ben, we would not win a game. The last three games, one or both have been out, and we're winning games. So it just tells you the improvement of the team.
Coach, you guys have been playing well. I saw you the other day without Joel Embiid. But without Joel Embiid, how concerned are you about his injury moving forward?
I'm not concerned anymore. Paul, I was concerned the moment that injury happened. Yeah. But once I saw, and Perk, you will understand what I'm about to say. Once I saw Joel walk off the floor instead of getting wheeled off the floor in a wheelchair, I was a little more comfortable.
I don't know where you're picking that out of the air, guy.
No, but listen, it's a concern because it's 3 weeks, Paul, and in the East or the West, if 3 weeks is a long time, and with the way that the second season is loaded, like, you have to win games. You can't lose games. You can end up in the third or fourth seed. So these games are important. We have to win without. So that's the concern, I would say, the most part. But I know he'll be healthy when he gets back. And so we just have to hold the fort until he gets back.
Absolutely.
Well, Coach, look, Doc. Well, I can't call you Doc no more. You said don't call you Doc. You Coach Glenn Rivers, all right?
No, so listen. You can call me Doc.
There we go.
You can call me Doc. All right, well, look.
It's just Doc, in Philadelphia. Listen. I'm not Doc.
Okay, listen. Doc, I got y'all picked coming out of the Eastern Conference. You already know this. I'm just keeping it 100. It's not about me and your relationship. I can't say, you know, somebody else on here. I'm Butu brother. You kind of got somebody else. I ain't going to say his name, Paul Pierce. But anyway, when I'm watching this Philadelphia 76er team, they're playing inspired basketball, passing up good shots to get great shots on the offensive end, playing the gender-free, tied on the string defensively. My first question is, how do you see any similarities to this Sixer team, to our 2008 championship team? Two, how has the impact of Danny Green and Dwight Howard leadership affected the locker room for us with the Philadelphia 76ers?
Well, with the first question, yes, defensively. The other thing I would say is, you know, when we needed a bucket, we had obviously Paul, Ray, but we could also drop it down to KG. And having Joel be that is really good. Danny and Dwight have been amazing. Dwight is 35 going on 20, you know, with his, like, joy and his athleticism and his spirit, his energy. I'm shocked by how much he brings every night. And Danny is just a pro, man. And, you know, you think about Danny Green, everywhere he goes, teams seem to win. At some point, that's not a coincidence.
I do want to ask Paul and Perk, what is the best speech Doc ever gave you guys? Because Doc Rivers' pregame halftime speeches, they are legend around the NBA.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And that was the time, and everybody knows this story, when we're in L.A. playing the Lakers, and he put the money in there during the season, up in the ceiling. He was like, give me 100. We was like, what Doc taking 100 for? What we do? You know, we giving Doc 100. We like, what's this for? You know, and I think KG was like, man, I ain't giving you 100. He like, Kevin, give me 100. So everybody gave him 100. He put it into the roof. And he said, all right, guys, we're going to be back here for the finals. And then lo and behold, we're there for the finals, and we went up there, and the money was still there. That was like, I will never forget that. Unfortunately, we didn't win that year, but he just knew something about this team.
If you remember, we had lost that
Christmas game. We lost the game.
Yeah, during the regular season. And I'm walking back to the locker room, and I felt that was the first time that we had kind of lost our spirit. And, you know, sometimes things just come to you. That was a great, lucky moment. Like, it just came to me to ask for money. First of all, Kevin Garnett never had money, which is absolutely amazing. I never understood that. So he had to borrow. I think he had to borrow money from one of y'all.
He never cut money on him.
Which is crazy.
I know, right?
Doc, what would you have done if you guys hadn't made it to the finals? Would you have, like, gone and secretly collected the money, or would you have just waited until next season?
Me and Kevin Eastman were the only two people that knew where the money was at.
but you know the good thing about that, though? It was trust. because Doc made us, he kicked the ball boys out, and it was just us in the room. And for all, in order for someone to know that it was money in there, someone would have had to open their mouth to an outsider. So it was trust within our team, organization, and that went a long way. But, Rachel, look, I got a lot of stories about Doc. His pregame speeches are the best. I'm not just telling them that, right? It was one that he had on MLK Day, had me in tears. Yeah. And I'm sitting up here saying, hold on, Doc, we trying to go play basketball. But I'm going to tell you one thing that I love that Doc did. Our first regular season game, it wasn't a speech that he gave. It was, we walked into the locker room. We was going into the arena. And Gilbert Arenas was talking noise. This was the time that the Washington Wizards was rolling and, you know, they were talking
noise.
Picture
Gilbert talking.
Of,
that's so strange.
Right. Yeah, they were kind of a powerhouse in the Eastern Conference. And I remember Doc had the article on the door as we was walking into the locker room. And he also brought up the article again during the pregame and got us fired up. And I think we blew him out by like 50. And it was just in the garden. It was rocking. But he had us going because they was talking. Gilbert Arenas was talking so much noise in the article. And Doc just had to bring it up. And that was my favorite one.
Just had to, Doc. He had to.
Well, you know, nowadays I don't have to. We got the jump. We got all these other shows. Y'all talking about it. Y'all did all my work for me. It's so much easier.
We aim to please here. Now I do.
I appreciate it.
I do want to say, I want to get your take on something we've been talking about on the jump. You have previously said you think Ben Simmons should win Defensive Player of the Year. Well, Joel Embiid has also said he thinks he should win Defensive Player of the Year. So
yeah,
what is going on?
Yeah, Ben, I'm voting for Joel MVP, but Ben is a lock, like, to me. He guards every position, you know, and he makes such a difference. It's not just at the rim. It's everywhere. Like, he literally at times swallows players, and I've not seen that.
I agree, Doc. And to me, the great thing about Ben Simmons is that he has accepted that role. He's not searching for his offense. He's actually searching to be the leader on the defensive end and letting Joel rock out on the offensive end. This is why I got the 76ers coming out of the Eastern Conference, Paul Pierce. Okay?
So why are you giving me all this infants?
We know where Paul's winning already. So
hey. We're going to have a conversation about this.
Harden, Durant, that's tough. I mean, come on, that's tough. You know, Doc. If you wasn't coaching the 76ers. They're really good. I mean, you got three all-time players on there. It's hard to not pick them.
You guys, by the way, are letting Doc totally give the coach speak and pass. I know you think Embiid should be MVP, so you're going to give Doc, Ben Defensive Player of the Year.
I agree.
But Joel says he should be Defensive Player of the Year, too.
I love that. I actually love that.
That's a good point.
He's been great. Listen, if I can have one and two defensive votes, then that means Perk is right. You know, that's what that would mean. Because Joel scores, he does a lot, but he's been dominant defensively as well.
Dominant.
So, listen, if we can end up with that, we're in great shape.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Doc, before I let you go, this is the most important question of all. Who caused you more stress, Paul Pierce or Kendrick Perkins?
Oh, I know. That was probably me.
Oh, that's easy, right?
I spent more time with Dr. Perk.
Yeah, I think Paul was in the principal's office a little bit more than Perk.
And there we have it. Jack, thank you so much. Paul, you want to defend yourself or no before we let him go?
We Libras, man. We clash, man. We got the same birthday.
October 13th.
Well, you guys know, look, I don't know if people out there remember. I know you guys are kind enough to always make mention of it. I was the SportsCenter reporter that was embedded with you guys during your title run, your run to the finals again in 2010. One of the most fun teams I have ever covered in any sport. I love when you all get together. So, Doc, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck the rest of the way this season.
Thanks, guys. And that was a fun group.
It was so fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Doc, take it easy.
Take care, guys.
See you later, Doc.
Ubuntu, my friends. Here's what the jump recommends for today. Our insiders provide the blueprint for how the Knicks could be trade deadline winners, which includes playing the long game and looking ahead to free agency in 2022. Check that out during the break. We're going to discuss that finish in the Big Apple last night next. You know the expression about New York? If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Well, as someone who lived there for nearly two decades, I would offer a small tweak. The saying should really be, if you can make it there, you don't need to make it anywhere else. New Yorkers don't see themselves as a subset of the rest of the country. They see themselves as their own country. And whether the subject is sneakers or pizza or professional basketball teams, how famous or successful you are in the rest of America is frankly irrelevant. It's what you do within the confines of the five boroughs that matters. That's why last night's Knicks-Nets game felt big. That's why Spike Lee was there doing Spike Lee things. Why the building managed to feel electric despite it only being about 1,600 fans on a Monday in March. It's why the Knicks kept battling even after the Nets came out shooting 70% in the first quarter. By halftime, Brooklyn was up double digits. James Harden was making passes like this, and Kyrie Irving was making shots, ooh, like that. I mean, come on, let's be honest. There were a lot of Knicks teams from previous years who would have just packed it in at that point. But this is a Tom Thibodeau team, which means packing it in is not an option unless you want to be very, very unhappy in practice the next day. This team kept the score at least within shouting distance in the second half. This team has guys like Frank Ntilikina, who managed to completely energize the Knicks defense on his way to fouling out in just 16 minutes of play. It was very impressive. This team is the one experiencing the Julius Randle renaissance. Here is Randle in the fourth. Yeah, just money. Bringing the Knicks within four with less than 2 minutes to play, Randle would finish with 33, 12, and 6, but he wasn't the only one scoring. Five different Knicks were in double digits. And they were also doing stuff like this. This, my friends, this is how you defend in a late game situation, right? Or this, under eight on the clock, RJ Barrett and Alec Burks wrestling the ball away from Joe Harris. Officials called a foul on that one, which Tibbs in turn challenged, which the refs in turn then spent roughly 3 days debating, but finally we got a jump ball. But just seconds later, as the Knicks tried to force overtime, more officiating controversy when Randle is called for an up-and-down travel. Now, Julius tried to explain to the ref that Kyrie made contact with the ball there, but he got no quarter, and you can see his teammates eventually nudging him off the court as a portion of the fans who were there started screaming, well, I'm not going to repeat on TV what they said, but let's just call it a delightful New York expression. This was, after all, a New York game. And while, yes, the Nets' win will go down in the larger NBA standings, where last night just becomes one of 72, in New York, this is going to be a night to remember, with both Nets and Knicks fans having plenty to boast about. If you can make it there, well, really, does anything else matter? Perk, do you understand Julius Randle's frustration there with the travel call?
No, I don't understand it, Rachel. And finally, the referees got it right. He traveled. Look, Kyrie did touch the ball, but he had to knock it out of his hand in order for him for it to not to be a travel. This was a travel. The referees got the call right. Great defense by Kyrie Irving. But the thing I love about Julius Randle is the passion. I don't care if he was walking out and they had to hold him back. He kicked over chairs. I love it. You know why? Because it shows that he wants to win. It shows that the New York Knicks are about winning, finally. So, look, the passion I love, the referees got the call right. Keep going, Julius Randle. I love the passion that the Knicks are playing with.
Rach, I love New York. I miss New York. But I'll tell you, I flipped that game off with about 30 seconds left. Puttered around my house, got some stuff done, washed the dishes, turned the TV back on. It's still going on. The Knicks didn't give up. What happened? I rewound. I saw the jump balls. This is all Knicks fans have been begging for 5 years. Yeah, 20 and 20. It's not amazing. A hard playing, no quit, no nonsense team that's taking you to the wire. This is what they have been begging for. And when the crowds come back, both to Barclays and to MSG, that crowd, it would have been an insane 50-50 crowd. MSG is going to be crazy. Do I understand Julius Randle's frustration? Do I understand the traveling rule? Does anybody actually understand the traveling rule? I agree. I think he traveled, but I do understand his frustration because it is that Kyrie did get a fingertip on the ball, and you know what? He's fighting to win the game, and that's the point. That's what Knicks fans have been begging for so long, and that's why this team has captured the city a little bit.
Well, Rachel, I'm just trying to visualize Zach Lowe washing dishes. Like, that part right there, I'm trying to, like, just wrap
elite,
my mind
up. I'm elite.
I might need to call Vesna for a fact check there. Check with your wife there, Zach. I don't know. I'm going to need some video, some tape on that one for sure. But you're absolutely right.
All the doubters. Everyone doubts my household skills. Keep doubting. That the hate fuels me.
You're like the Knicks. You're going to come back stronger than ever. And your point about the last 5 years is so true. I think that's what everybody is responding to so much. It doesn't matter what the end is. The win-loss record, it's going to be great if they make the playoffs. They don't have to make the playoffs. They have to be trying, and the direction of the franchise feels so different than it has in previous years. I don't care who lost or won this game last night. I care that they put forth a New York-style basketball game. It was fun to see that back. All right, let's switch over to the Bucks, because back-to-back MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo dropped 31 to go along with 15 boards, 10 dimes in a win last night, becoming the first player in Bucks history to log three straight triple-doubles. Giannis really picked it up over his last 10 games, averaging 32 points a game, leading the Bucks to wins in 9 of those games, and even raising his free throw shooting to 80% in that span. Well, nearly. Zach, can Giannis sustain this pace in the second half?
Triple-doubles, probably not, but this level of play in general, why not? He just won two MVPs in a row. Here come the Bucks. Here comes Giannis. And whether you like it or not, and there are some people who don't because it would feel uncomfortable to vote him MVP again after what happened in the playoffs. Only three players have ever won the MVP three times in a row: Larry Bird, Wilt Chamberlain, and Bill Russell. And they all did it during championship runs or with a championship run in one of the first two seasons. Whether you like it or not, he is playing his way right back into the MVP conversation. He has been that good, and Joel Embiid gets injured, the Lakers slide a little bit, all of a sudden, Giannis is right back in the conversation, whether voters want him to be or not.
Well, I mean, he is dominating right now. And when you look at a guy like Giannis, Rachel, he is going to be able to sustain this, not just for this part, for the rest of this season in the playoffs, but for the next 10 years. He put on, 50 pounds of muscle? I mean, he is a guy that reminds me of LeBron James. Over the next 10 years, we're going to be talking about Giannis being in the MVP conversation. He's that good. He's a physical specimen. And so when you look at what he's doing, I'm more impressed about his playmaking ability, because we all knew that he could get 30 in his sleep. We all know that he could get 12 to 15 rebounds a night. Now he's making others around him better. That is special. And sadly, I'm not one of those voters. Zach Lowe, you could say my name. You could put an address on it, Kendrick Perkins. I'm not one of those voters, but I do have to give props where props are due. And he is in that MVP conversation. And I just hope guys like myself, Rachel and Zach, don't get bored like we did with LeBron James, because this could be a time where in the next 10 years, we could vote Giannis as the MVP 5 of these next 10 years. He's going to be in the conversation in the next 10 years for sure.
Well, Kendrick, I'm going to give you that address. You can talk to Tim Frank at the league about your voting rights. I don't mean to be a Scrooge, by the way, every time I bring this up, but I'm going to do it again. We need to have two separate MVP conversations, right? Because in the conversation has now expanded to include like 8 to 10 people. and I think that we talk about guys being in the conversation as its own benchmark of success, which it certainly is. But we also know that they might not really be in the running for MVP. So we will have an outer conversation, an inner conversation. You can decide which part of the bubble Giannis belongs in. All I know is one of the guys we were talking about at the beginning of the year, CJ McCollum, is going to be back tonight. And we'll be talking about that up next here on The Jump. Returning after missing 25 games with a foot fracture. Are the Blazers poised to make a run here? Kendrick Perkins thinks so. We will discuss. It is crunch time here on The Jump. Good news out of Portland. CJ McCollum will make his return tonight against the Pelicans after missing 25 games with that fractured left foot. Remember, CJ started at an all-star pace before the injury, scoring nearly 27 a night, making more threes per game than anyone else in the league. So, Perk, what do you think CJ's return means for Portland?
It means everything, Rachel. Look, you have basketball players and you have hoopers. CJ McCollum is a hooper. He's going to pick up right where he left off at, and the Blazers are going to make a run. They're going to finish top five in the West. And here's why. With him being hurt, they were able to sharpen their other knives in the drawer, like Carmelo Anthony, Gary Trent Jr. Those guys were able to get their rhythm. So you add CJ McCollum, and he's just going to take off for the Trailblazers.
Portland fans don't have to hold their breath every time Damian Lillard goes to the bench, right? They have someone else to run the offense. By the way, Yusuf Nurkic is coming back pretty soon, too. Portland is sixth right now in the West. Moving up, if they move up, it's going to require them jumping a really good team. But what we're about to have dawn on us sort of collectively is number six is about to become one of the most important things in basketball because it gets you out of that play-in tournament. So just holding on to number six would be a big victory for Portland, given everything they've been through this season. Great perseverance by those guys, as Perk said.
Welcome back, CJ McCollum. All right, this just in at the buzzer. Mark Cuban said this on Live with Kelly and Ryan this morning.
All these rumors about Porzingis. What is going on with Porzingis? Is he going to be traded?
He's playing great. You know, that's the thing about sports. There has to be rumors because there's nothing else to do.
Porzingis,
no, we're not trading KP.
I was going to ask. I was the one that told you about Porzingis.
But this is big news. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, it's not going to happen, Ryan.
Okay.
You heard it here first. It's definitely not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
All right.
All right, you heard Cuban, guys. Definitely not going to happen. Zach, smart of him to shut down the rumors now, so close to the trade deadline. What do you think of that appearance?
First of all, does this mean I've technically been on TV with Ryan Seacrest? Because that's very exciting. Second of all, it means they're not trading Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, for the team governor to come out and say this, sure, we've seen GMs say things like that before and then things reverse. I don't see the Dallas reversing on this one.
Me either. I think you got to wait patiently, like Mark Cuban told us, Rachel, on the jump. This is a long process. Porzingis has been playing well. Let him and Luka do their thing.
Look, Mark Cuban said he's not going to make the Nash mistake again. I guess he's not. Thanks, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.